Part six of the series on Mishnah Berurah, Siman Kuf Nun Hei. And what's fascinating about this Mishnah Berurah is, I mentioned, it's chock full of golden nuggets. So in Siman Kuf Nun Hei, Siv Katan Hei, the Mishnah Berurah comments on a statement in the Mechaber. The Mechaber is addressing the obligation of all of us when we leave Shul in the morning, when we finish davening, we should right away be kovei itim la-Torah. We should establish fixed times during the day to learn, and we should not, under any circumstances, compromise on that fixed amount of time. Even if there's a possibility, potentially, of profiting an astronomical kind of sum of money. Says the Mishnah Berurah in Siv Katan Hei, v'ish kazeh hu mibali amona. Such a person demonstrates his emuna in Hashem Yisbarach. He will not be mikupach. In no way will his parnasa be impacted, be jarred by this kviya sitim la-Torah. And he quotes a Yerushalmi in Seita. My anshi amona, the Yerushalmi asks, whom are these anshi amona, people of emuna? We have a situation where there's a seller and there are buyers, and the buyers are essentially waiting for the seller to come with his merchandise. The heavy Omar, less anon bevantel onsi. This seller has a kviyas hitim, let's say 15 minutes a day after davening, where he devotes that 15 minutes to the study of Torah. Madechami lemeisi meisi. So the seller essentially says to them that, listen, I'm not going to be mevatel that hour, or those 15 minutes, because of some sum of money. If Hashem wants me to be deserving of that sum of money, it will come on its own. Or it will come even after I complete my kviyas. So the Mishnah Berurah here is making a very fundamental statement, and I would like to explore the parameters of that statement of the Mishnah Berurah. Before I enter the particulars of some of the parameters of bitachon, and I'm not here to tell any chidushim, but I will perhaps cite the Maseiach Yesharim. I'll be saying things that are dvarim pshutim, axiomatic and fundamental, very basic. But I will attempt to adduce proofs from all over in Tanakh and a number of Mamori Chazal to strengthen the position. But I'll begin with the famous question that was asked by many Gedolei Yisrael, and you have in front of you, or on your screen, two famous Peskim, the Gedolei Apostim Shel Doreinu, Hagaon Rav Avadia Yosef Zatzal, and Hagaon Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal. They were both asked to weigh on the question of someone who wanted to purchase insurance. So is that considered to be the purchase, let's say, of life insurance, or for that matter, other types of insurance? Is that considered to be a lacuna in my bitachon in Hashem Yisbarach? Or am I permitted to go ahead and engage in the purchase of insurance and the like? And both of them express essentially the same yesod. Rav Avad Yosef Paskins, you can see it on page number 3 in the Sikkum. There's no difficulty a person purchasing insurance. There's no lack of bitachon. As long as it's in line with the Torah thinking, there's no stira, there's no contradiction. It's not an oxymoron. Namely, having bitachon in Hashem Yisbarach and simultaneously purchasing insurance. On page number 4 and 5, the first of two tshuvas of Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, the same question was asked, and Rav Moshe comes to the same maskana, to the same conclusion, that certainly a person has to do the hishtadlus that's required in order for him to enable himself to have a panasa. But at the same time, has to recognize that Panasa obviously comes from Hashem Yisbarach. The only reason why a person is compelled to work, says Hagoyin HaMashrafayis Zatzal, he cites the Chazal, the curse that was given to other Marishim, B'zeh Asapech Atzoch HaLechem, the Gemara at the end of Kedushin. The Gemara indicates that in an ideal world, in a utopian society, it would not be necessary. But because of the Chet, Hariosi Es Masai, V'Kipachti Es Parnasosi. I have unfortunately undone my idyllic, optimal situation and created a situation where I'm compelled to work and to engage in Ishtablus. But as Rav Moshe Feinstein Tzatzal indicates on page number 5 in the left-hand column towards the end of the Tshuva, he writes, V'lachen kemen sh'Hashem Yisbarach nasan deya b'doros ha'achron m'shiyah esek zeh shel insurance ba'olam shehu hashorah l'ziknusa v'l'yerusha b'derach tibi. Hashem has given us the possibility of acquiring insurance. That will be a kind of nest egg when a person becomes older, perhaps retires, perhaps a Yerusha that one can bequeath to one's children, grandchildren. It's something which is appropriate even for those who have bitachon, individuals who are yireim u'shleimim, and they have bitachon only in Hashem Yisbarach, shu anosin eitzo l'mikni nissin. The way the Targum translates the Pasuk Yedvarim, shu anosin l'chol koach lasos choyob, Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal cites the Targum, the gam mishakon insurance, unami atz Hashem Yisbarach l'mikni insurance. This is what Hashem Yisbarach wants us to do, to purchase insurance. And you have bitachon in Hashem Yisbarach, but at the same time you recognize that it's not the insurance policy that's going to give you and guarantee you security, but rather it's Hashem Yisbarach. So these two tshuvas are, to my mind, I could have cited other tshuvas. I believe they're reflective of the Torah Hashkafa position on the issue of bitachon that we're going to explore. There's a well-known Rashi at the end of Parshas Vayeshev.
David, I didn't understand. What was the problem? I don't understand the question. What's the half a minute is a problem with taking insurance? I don't get the question. I heard it before.
Chaim Zeinatzayim Bracha contended that any acquisition of insurance indicates that a person is lacking bitochen in Hashem Yisbarach. No one greater than the Chafetz Chaim Zeinatzayim Bracha. That was his contention. And obviously, you see, the Gedolei Yisrael of our generation are not in agreement with his position.
It's different than going to work?
So that we have to explore, and perhaps that's part of the exploration that I hope to do in Yetz Hashem. The truth is, you have just been mechayim me, which is fine, to learn Simen Kuf Nun Vav, which will be another several sessions. But before we get to that, perhaps I will just touch upon the issue that you are raising, which is a very legitimate question. What's the distinction between buying insurance and going to work? So again, I'm trying to...
It could be also that over the course of time, maybe it changed. I'm a little bit amorous in these matters, but what insurance was in the 1920s and 30s may have been different what insurance was in the 80s.
Perhaps, but I think the Chafetz Chaim was expressing a hashkofa. So I don't think it really is dependent upon the zeitgeist, upon the era that we're living in, or upon the technology that exists today, or upon all the other differences between his days and our days. I think he's saying a fundamental hashkafa, which is clearly, again, after we will explore the matter, probably in the realm of individuals of the caliber and of the ilk of the Chafetz Chaim Zecher Tzadik Livracha. But the question is whether it applies to Klal Yisrael, but open Klali. That's exactly, I believe, the position being taken by the two Gdol Yisrael that I just read, the Tshuvas, Hagoyin of Avad Yosef Zatzal, Hagoyin of Moshe Feinstein Zatzal. So perhaps one can make that chiluk. The Chafetz Chaim's Madrega is for those who are Bali Madrega in general. The Chasam Sofer already and many others point out there are really three broad categories of bitachon. Rabbi Feinberg, you have compelled me to go off the deviate from the path. But the Chasam Sofer writes that the highest levels of Shimon Yechoy V'chaverov, the Gemara says, Teirasan Umnusam, the Gemara in Shabbos, and the Yerushalmi we actually referred to it the other day. And their trust in Hashem Yisbarach was so absolute that essentially they have no need to engage in any kind of Ishtadlus whatsoever. They are Somech and Hashem Yisbarach, the Chafetz Chaim unquestionably was at that level. But I would venture to say that most of Klal Yisrael are in the middle category. Fine, wonderful, upstanding Jews, tzaddikim, and they are sometimes compelled to work for a living. Maybe we could try to emulate Rashi Menichoy. But the Gemara says in Lamehav Beis in Brachas, Harbi also Kashim Menichoy, but I also the Adam. The Gemara presents the Machlokes Rashi Menichoy Rabbi Shmuel. Hanik Ben Minadar Cheretz. So the Mishnah Berurah and the Bi Alocha and the Brisgav in his parish Al Teira and many Gdolei Apostkim have pointed out. The Gemara says Harbi Nagu Rashi Menichoy also rather will also the Adam. That's an indication that we don't paskin like a Rashi Menichoy. And the Bi Alocha writes that Rashi Menichoy's Madregas for Yechides Gula. He cites the Rambam in Shemitah V'Yovel, Perek Yigimel, Halacha Yigimel. Rizkulav also cites that Rambam. That Rambam speaks about Kol Echad Miboy Yoylam, Shehevino Mado, and wants to become connected to Hashem Yisbarach and Kedish Kadoshim, Vi Hashem Chelkom and Achaloso, Lohim Yoylamim, Hashem Enos Chelki V'Garoli, Ata Temech Garoli. So that's a Madrega of the Chavetz Chaim, of Rashbi, and therefore I believe that is the answer to the question that's being posed. I don't think there's any distinction between insurance and working for a living, but that applies to the middle category of the Chassam Sefer. To Rov of Klal Yisrael, Rov Minyan Binyan of Klal Yisrael, I would like to include myself in that category. I hope I can worthy of being minimally in the second category. Sometimes I'm not sure, but certainly I'm not the first category. That's Nava Posha. Those are the Pshita. And then, of course, the third category are those individuals who, unfortunately, fall into the pasuk in Yirmiyahu. The Navi says over there in Perek Yud Zayin, Or HaGever, who unfortunately,
Asher Som
Miftacho, but he's Som Miftacho with other human beings. Namely, Asher Yiftach Ba'odam, V'Som Basa Zro, Ume Hashem Yosu Libo. As we say in the davening, so that's the third person, people who essentially feel that this Chassam Sefer is found in the Perish Al HaTorah, I believe in Pasha B'Chukosai. That's where he mentioned this idea. So now, coming back to the basic issue, and I believe that this issue was summarized beautifully by these two Gedolei Yisrael, the Tshuvos that I read. But also, I believe it's embedded in the Rashi at the end of Vayeshev. The Torah there tells us when Yosef, Baruch Hashem, was able to be involved with the Sar HaMashkim, Sar HaOfim, and we know what happened after he interprets their dreams, and the last pasuk of Vayeshev, Lo Yizochar Sar HaMashkim Es Yosef Vayishkocheyu. And Rashi there on the spot comments that the butler forgot about Yosef, and since Yosef had made himself dependent on the butler, he was punished by being imprisoned for another 2 years. And Rashi there quotes a pasuk in Tehillim. I think it's in Perek Mem. Ashri agere asher som Hashem yiftachu lo'yponu el rehovim. There are different pshatim in that Rashi. The simple pshat in the pasuk is happy is the person who puts his trust in Hashem and doesn't turn to rehovim. In general, Mitzrayim is called Rav. Rav is the singular of Rehavim. Rehavim refers to individuals who are arrogant, contemptuous of others. So, what exactly is the pshat in that Rashi is a machlokes the Netziv and the Chazanish. The Netziv is Perish Al HaTorah, and the Chazanish is Sefer Emunah Bitochon. But I simply want to derive from there what I believe Hagoyin Rav Avadya Zatzal and Hagoyin Rav Moshe Zatzal are telling us. Even though Rashi looks negatively upon the request of Yosef, but if you look at the Medrash, on that pasuk, so in Rashi you get the impression that Yosef is being critiqued by Chazal for lacking bitachon in Hashem. But in the Medrash, Yosef is praised for being a man of bitachon. As a matter of fact, there seems to be a stira minei ubei. There's an internal contradiction over here. The pasuk begins with Ashri agev asher som Hashem miftacho, praising Yosef. And then the pasuk, the way Rashi quotes the Medrash, takes him to task. So he suffers some sort of momentary lapse by asking the Sar HaMashkim to intervene on his behalf to Paro. So it appears the Medrash, as I said, is criticizing Yosef, not for the fact that he asked for help, but apparently what was the issue? And this, I believe, the issue, which I would like to address. And that's the issue, I think, that Moshe Feinstein Zatzal and Rav Yosef Zatzal are essentially the expositors of, namely, Yosef did not maintain the proper balance between bitochon and ishtadlus. And that is really the major issue that each one of us encounter. Yosef generally maintained this balance impressively, but in terms of the request that Yosef made, he was punished. And this is the dilemma that all of us confront on an ongoing basis. Namely, bitochon versus ishtadlus. How much ishtadlus? What level of bitochon should we be applying? But the solution does not lie in either extreme. The ideal is neither to remain totally passive and inactive. On the other hand, nor should we assume total independence from Hashem Yisbarach. Extreme and exclusive bitochon that precludes any human effort is not the ideal course necessarily for the average person. Perhaps it applies to the Chafetz Chaim. And it could very well be that that's exactly the issue of Yosef. He was on such a level, such a madrega, that he was expected to behave without any hishtadlus whatsoever. That's how, as I indicated, this is the subject of a discussion between the Chazon Ish and the Netziv. And the pasuk in Tehillim that I mentioned earlier from Yirmiyahu HaNavi that speaks about a person who trusts in another human being, and he's considered to be someone who is ka'aror ba'arava, as opposed to someone who trusts in Hashem, who is ke'ed shosu al-pagimayim. Anyone who understands the Sefer Yirmiyahu will realize Yirmiyahu is not advocating total passivity, nor is he saying that one should never utilize protection. That's a concept that, I don't know, Kvod HaRav, if that exists over there where you are, but that is the mahus of living in Eretz Yisrael, one of the very fundamental elements of living in this country. But I think the point that the Navi is making is one has to put his trust in Hashem Yisbarach and not in human beings. And these are also psukim that are found in Parshas Ekev, namely, Hishama lecha pentishkachas Hashem alokecha, pentoicha v'savata, uvatim toivim tivne v'yashoveta, uvkarcha v'tzoncha yirbiyon, v'chesev v'zav yirbelach, v'chol asher lecha yirbe, v'rom lubavecha, v'shachachtas Hashem alokecha, hamotziacha meretz v'tzayim beis avodim. And the Torah describes what Hashem did for Klal Yisrael in our peregrination in the Midbar. And unfortunately, what do we say to ourselves? Koichi v'eitzim yodi, also the Yisachayel Hazeh. It's in the might of my own hand. So, v'zachadas Hashem elokecha ki anes elcha koyach la'asol schoyel, as I just mentioned. And that's essentially what Moshe Rabbeinu is describing. A scenario where we carry out our actions ourselves in Eretz Yisrael, but we have to recognize that it's the Yad Hashem. Hashem is the one who gives us the strength. He gives us the capability of doing so. And the same Yisod is also Nogiyat HaChanukah that Habo Aleinu L'Toyva, Bo'ot Shuayim, in the Haftarah, the first Shabbos of Chanukah, where the Navi Zechariah says, Lo b'chayel v'lo b'choyach ki im beruchi om Hashem tzvokos. It doesn't mean that Zerubbabel should not use might, should not use power. But it means that achievement doesn't come through these elements alone, but comes through primarily the addition of Bruchi, my spirit, to the Yad Hashem, to Hashkocha Pratis. So essentially, this is the assault, I believe, that the Achronim, the Gdoli Achronim that we began with, that's what they say. That there's a need for Ishtadlus, but ultimately there has to be a recognition, namely, Bitochen Hashem Yisbarach, it's not my Ishtadlus that's going to accomplish, but rather, it's the Ribbono Shel Bikocho, Ubigvaroso, he's the one who directs traffic. In a similar fashion, we have actually in the famous Parsha of Ayishlach, where Yaakov Avinu prepares himself for the encounter with Esav, Bidoron, Bitfila, Bilmulchama. So each of these aspects are very critical. And undoubtedly, the Ramban of Ayikra, the famous Ramban, the Enbechu Kosai, who essentially tells us in an ideal world, in the utopian universe, a tzaddik gomer does not require medical care. Hashem Yisbarach will directly provide for their needs. That's the Mishnah of Psachim, where Chizkiyahu was gonei sefer refuos. Nevertheless, the standard Jewish approach is an activist one. And that's what the Rambam is cholek on. The Ramban, he doesn't mention the Ramban by name, but in Pirsha Mishnayis of Psachim, in the fourth parak of Agam Shenagu, he censures the Ramban, censures that position, and he explains why Chazal, when Meshabeach Chizkiyahu HaMelech, for being gonei sefer refuos. And the Rambam indicates very clearly that this machlokes is exactly what the book was, but the Rambam brings several explanations and then cites a position that it was a book that had all types of medical remedies composed by Shlomo HaMelech. Chizkiyo hid it because people, instead of trusting in Hashem, they trusted in that Sefer. And the Rambam rejects that shot and declares that it's a foolish approach. Why would Chizkiyo be praised for denying people access to medicine and access to medical treatment? If reliance on medicine were also, then by the same logic, says the Rambam, would one claim that a hungry person who is starving and now eats in order to relieve his hunger and heal himself, would that be considered to be a chesaron and bitachon of Hashem Yisbarach? Is that considered to be someone who doesn't trust in Hashem? Just as I thank Hashem for the food He provided me, Hazonas ha'olam kulo betuvo b'chein b'chesed u'rachamim, and I'm made it to Hashem Yisbarach. So too, I'm made it to Hashem Yisbarach providing the cure that heals me when I utilize it. And this is essentially the approach, which I believe is the very central hashkafic position regarding bitachon and hishtadlus. We have to take an active role. How much of an active role is probably a function of the level of bitachon that I'm on. But whatever the case is, whatever hishtadlus I do, whichever level I'm at, I have to recognize that ultimately it's all Yad Hashem. It's Ribbono Shel who controls and directs traffic, and He's the one essentially who's directing all the affairs. So I began with that discussion of the two tshuvas of the Igros Moshe and Yechaveh Das, which are very fundamental, I believe, in expressing what I think the Mishnah Berurah is alluding to as well. Even though the Mishnah Berurah is rather succinct, but the Mishnah Berurah indicates that I have a kriyas in Limud HaTorah. Of course, I'm also involved in some sort of a contractual business type of situation. Both have to be taken into account. Clearly, a person has to recognize that I have to have Ishtadlus, but at the same time, the recognition that Yad Hashem is Koveya, and I have to leave room for Kriyas Itam LaTorah as well. Now, I would like to broaden this discussion and begin to explore a bit more carefully some of the parameters of that which I began. Rabbi Shechaim Lutzato, the Mesilas Yeshorim, in the first parak, writes the following. Hine, the Ribbono Shel Olam, he says, has placed me b'mokom sherabim bo hamachikim also mimeno yizbarach. There are many detractors. There are many forces in the world that would like to distance me from Hashem Yizbarach. Ki kol inyoni ha'olam ben letov ben lera, everything in the world, for good and for bad, hine yem yisyonos la'odom. They represent tests. Hashem is constantly testing us. The Ramban writes in the context of the Akedah, Velokim Nisa Es Avram, Hashem does not present anyone with a test unless he has the potential ability to weather that test and to overcome and to hopefully be elevated by it. So there are all kinds of tests, all kinds of nisyonos. Oni mitzad echad, poverty on the one hand, Osher mitzad echad, wealth on the other hand. Shalva mitzad echad, prosperity. We tzad echad on one side, Yisurim mitzad echad, and God forbid a person being afflicted with Yisurim. Achen nimtzei samilchama elav ponim v'achar. Person is literally confronted in front of him, behind him, and unquestionably, probably the greatest and one of the most significant of all the challenges that all of us face is the struggle between the obligation to have bitachon and Hashem Yisbarach, as the Navi says, kigmul aleimo, as a child who's completely dependent on his mother. He will not move without obviously being in contact with its mother, with his mother, her mother, and on the other hand, the obligation of ishtadlus that each one of us has. So that is the challenge that all of us had, and this is already actually discussed by the author of the Mesilas Yesharim in Perek Gimel, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, but I would like to share with you a number of yesodos that in the course of many decades I heard from my rabbeim regarding this matter. In Parshas Beshalach, the Torah describes a grave situation that Klal Yisrael was confronted with. Pasuk says, "Vayisu b'nei Yisrael seinehem, v'nei Mitzrayim noseh achareihem." The Egyptians are pursuing them, and obviously Klal Yisrael is in a state of fright. And a bit later, Vayom Moshe Elohim Al Tiro. Whenever I encounter this pasuk, I remind myself of a time that I was in the United States in a certain shul. Perhaps Rabbi Brick's father, Shlita, will be able to relate to this. That Shabbos, they called it Shabbos Tachrishun. I was absolutely beside myself. Namely, there's a massive problem in shuls all over the world, not Eitzel Kvod Harav, I'm sure this issue doesn't exist. Sometimes people tend to be garrulous, tend to chat. Baruch Hashem, one of the major pluses of the shul that I now find myself in is that people are just engaged in davening. And of course, the kapsulot just help the situation. Not that I'm promoting the kapsulot, I'm not. I hope we're able to emerge from that shortly. But in general, from what I understand, there's literally no talking unless it's tzorech chiyuni, tzorech gadol, ashas hatak. Everyone is there for the purpose of, as the Gemara says in Megillah, b'yish megadlim bo Torah, b'yish megadlim bo tefillah, baruch Hashem, sheiganu to such a place. But that's not always the case in many, many shuls across the world. So I come to a shul in a certain state. I won't even allude to which state it is. I travel in many states. And which city? And which shul? And that Shabbos was declared by the OU to be Shabbos Tachrishon. Namely, there's going to be quiet. One Shabbos in the year, there will be quiet. Hashem Yilachem Lachem V'Atem Tachrishon. I was absolutely astounded. And that Shabbos was a very quiet Shabbos. I was quite impressed. Anyway, this pasuk always reminds me of that. I don't think that's the intention of the pasuk. I don't think that's the pshuto shel mikra, for what I understand. But whatever the case, the Torah describes Klal Yisrael in a very beleaguered situation. And there's a well-known medrash that all of us are familiar with, and Chazal described the situation of Klal Yisrael compared to a Yonah, to a dove that ran away. There's a bird of prey that is pursuing it. And as a result, the Yonah is compelled to literally find refuge in the cleft of a rock, the Kiksela. However, in that cleft, there's a snake that is awaiting. And we have a situation where he's caught between, as the expression, some of you may be familiar, between Scylla and Charybdis. Namely, you have two different opposing forces here, and I'm caught betwixt and between. So that was the matzah of Klal Yisrael al Sfas Hayam. To go back, they weren't able to. They were frightened of the Egyptians. On the other hand, to move forward, they couldn't, because we have cascading torrential waves in front of me. So now the question is, what did Moshe have in mind? Moshe tells them, Al Tiro, don't be afraid. Everything is fine. What do you mean everything is fine? What greater matzav of sakona could there possibly be? And the logic says that one should be choshish for sakona, not just logic. Halacha indicates that very clearly. So what in heaven's name are these words of hargaah that are said by Moshe Rabbeinu to Klal Yisrael? He's attempting to somehow create a situation of halcyon atmosphere. Everything is calm. Nothing is calm. And the answer is pashut. And this is what Omer Abayim said. That here we have a haftacha, and Moshe Rabbeinu indicates, and that's what he said. Hashem yilachem lachem, v'yatem tachrishon. Essentially, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a blank check that we have someone to be somich on, and all the sakonos, abotel mevuto, ke'afrodara. In line with the Dafayomi Gemara that we're learning these days. So not only is there a haftocha in the words of Moshe Rabbeinu, there's also a tzivui. Moshe commands them, lo lefachei, not to be afraid. Just like the Torah has in Isser in Dvarim, it's quoted by the Rambam, Sefer Mitzvos, it's a lav, that a soldier going to war, al yerach levavchem, al tiru, al tachbezu, v'al tarzu mipneihem. And someone who permits pachad to overtake him, B'shas Mechama violates four lavin. So too, Moshe Rabbeinu issued a hirah shah not to be afraid of Mitzrayim. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a haftacha that we have nothing to fear, then, in effect, there is a tzivoy, lo lefachein. I think there's some digging that people like to sing, if I'm not mistaken. Lo lefachein, not to be afraid. But that only is applicable if the Ribbono Shel Olam gives a haftacha that nothing will happen. So under those circumstances, not to have bitachon in Hashem Yisbarach, not to have emunah. But if there's no such haftacha, namely, I didn't hear any haftacha of Hashem Yilachim Lachem Vatem Tachrishun.
That's also a nigun now.
Nevuah. There's no prophecy that I can rely on. Adraba. Then a person has to be Zohir V'Zohir. Person has to be Nizar. Person has to be as careful as he possibly can. Has to take every precaution imaginable in order that Chas V'Sholom, nothing should happen. So this is a clear mandate of the Psukim in Parshat B'Shalach. On the other hand, we have another very significant element. Moshe Rabbeinu, again in B'Shalach, tells Klal Yisrael, don't worry about Parnasa. There's going to be the man. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised us, man min ha-shamayim, dvar yom b'yomo, en ish al yosim imenu ad boker. Moshe Rabbeinu instructs us, directs us, gives us specific directives in terms of what to do, and we have to have bitachon that man will come down on the morn, and Klal Yisrael are obligated to gather the man on a daily basis, and there's an iser to test Hashem Yisbarach, and even a person who's a baal bitachon, and he's certain that Kodesh Baruch Hu will provide him with mizonos, but the question is, how do I put my wife and children and family in a potential sakana? And we find also by Kriyas Yamsuf, only after Hashem told Moshe to go ahead and tear the yam, split the sea, rent it asunder, then Nachshon Ben Aminadab comes and he jumps into the yam. Even though when he jumped at that moment, the sea had not split. The Pasuk says, Vayavo b'nei Yisrael b'socha yam b'yabosha. Only afterwards, when he demonstrated Mesiras Nefesh, b'yabosha. But if not for the Haftacha of Hashem Yisbarach, then it would not be called Mesiras Nefesh Dvar Hashem. What would it be called? Kamikaze work. Suicidal in nature. Because B'derech HaTeva, the sea does not split. And even those who jump into the sea and they believe Be'emunah Shleimah that it will split, I don't think the sea is too impressed by their spectacular kind of exploits. So this is a very fundamental yesod. And this yesod, I want to mention a very fascinating chiddush I heard from my guy, Avigdor Levinson Shlita. There's a famous kasha, the Netziv, on the Taisis in Bar Metzia. Taisis Daf Kuf Yudalid on the base. Taisis has the kasha. Those who contend that Eliyahu HaNavi was a kohen, so how could he go ahead? We know that Eliyahu and his Talmud Elisha are very into Tchias HaMesim. They're into resuscitating the dead, resurrecting. So the question is, Eliyahu is a kohen. How could he go and lie down the Isha Tzorfatis, that her son passed away? So Eliyahu goes ahead and lies on the child in order to be Mechayim Mesim, but he's a kohen. There's a clear pasuk in Chumash. He's not allowed to be Metami himself. So Taisa says a striking answer. Daf Kuf Yudal Mebeis Dibi Amaschal Omale. Answers Taisa that since it was clear to Eliyahu HaNavi Sheyichaye Tayelet, he knew he had the koyach to effect Tchias HaMesim. Therefore, he was allowed to go ahead and come into contact with a dead child. So the Netziv is thunderstruck by this teretz of Taisa. Why does Taisa assume that Eliyahu was certain that the child is going to live, that he'll be able to effect a tchias hamesim, he'll be able to somehow perform this miracle, even if it was only a suffix. We know there's a din that suffix bikuach nefesh is deicha, the iser of a kayin being mitame to a mace. It overrides the entire Torah. Certainly it overrides the Isur of a Kohen not being mitami to a mace. So the Netziv presents Kedarko Bakodesh, a very lumdish teretz that I won't get into. Which is, by the way, you'll take a look at it, there's a big machlokes regarding his approach. But I heard from Agoin Rav Nevesol Shlita a very pushy teretz to this kashya. He said there's no question. The question doesn't begin. When we say that something B'Kuach Nevesh is Doicha Kol HaTorah Kula, that it overrides everything, with the exception, of course, of the three cardinal sins that we're familiar with, namely Gila Arayus, Shrichas Damim, Avodah Zarah, that's only under what circumstances? Where a person wants to do an Avera, a person wants to do something which is Asur, which B'Derech HaTeva, you're going to give the individual who's not well, who's ailing, who's sick, a possibility of living. But this notion of lying on a dead body and somehow believing that this action of lying on the child is going to be Mechayim Esim, I am not familiar, said her, I've never saw Shlita, with any halachic categories that this fits into Sofik Pikuach Nevesh, which is Doicha Kol HaTorah Kula. There's no Sofik that a Kohen who's not a Novi, like Elio, would not be allowed to do so. Maybe a child is going to live. A person would probably get malchus for this. So the reason why Tosfos says that the action was permissible only because Elio was certain that the mace is going to become the tchia, but any other claim, such an action would be literally buffoonery, holus, would have no basis in halacha whatsoever. That's how Rav Nevesol wanted to approach the matter. But again, all this is simply being said in the context of that if I have a clear nevuah mefureshes from Hashem Yisbarach or a haftoch of Hashem Yisbarach, he's going to help me. There's no question that I'm samech on that. When I don't have such a nevuah, when I don't have such a haftoch, then there's no doubt that here in this situation, a person's approach has to be completely different. And we actually see, for example, in the case of Yonasan and Shaul, and in the well-known description, very dramatic description of Tanakh, of the one that my father used to call Goliath, Goliath HaPlishti. So we are familiar with the Gidufim, with all of his curses that the Navi describes as Shaul HaMelech heard the Divrei HaPlishti, and they were frightened. They were intimidated by this Goliath. He was a giant who was incredibly intimidating. And the Pasuk says in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Zayin, take a look at Sukkim here, Yud Al Til Chavdalin. V'chalish Yisrael b'rosim esayish v'yanusim mipanov. They were frightened of him. So the obvious question is, how is that possible? And this kasha was asked by Hagoyin of Chatzko Levinstein, the Mashgiach Aponovich. How could there be such fear? There's a law in the Torah. We mentioned it earlier. That a soldier going to war, Ayerech Levavchem, Al Tiru, Al Tachbazu, Al Tarzu, Ribdechem. And furthermore, Yonasan ben Shaul, they already were engaged in war with the Machane Plishti. And at that point, Yonasan himself made a public pronouncement. So we don't fully understand why is it that somehow Pachad entered even Lelibo Shel Yonasan. Even he was seized with a certain fear. So undoubtedly the Torah has told those going to war not to be afraid. And the Torah tells us, Ki Hashem Elokeichem, Haholech Imochem, Lilochem, Lochem, Baivechem, Loshiaschem. However, there's a prerequisite to that statement on the part of the Torah. And the Akdama is the following. This is the Kohen Mashiach Melchama, who makes the following statement. Shema Yisrael, Atem Kreivim Hayom Na Melchama Loiveichem, Al Yerech Levavchem, Al Tiru, Al Tachbezu. And Chazal have a famous comment, the Gemara in Seita, Dav Mem Beis Amud Aleph. Afilu Lo Kiyamtem Lo Kriyashma Shachas V'Arvis, even if you only said Kriyashma in the morning and at night, Iyatem Nibsarim B'Yodam. In order that Hashem should carry out the role of directing traffic and helping us win the war and waging the war with us, for that haftacha to be fulfilled, there's a prerequisite, namely, that one has to follow the Darkei Hashem. In general, soldiers have to be great tzaddikim because they need that schus in order to prevail over the enemy. So if we have that foundation of Kiyum HaMitzvah, then we can be assured of the help of Hashem Yisbarach. Then we don't have to be afraid of the enemy. If the Torah tells us, Bischar Kriyashma, we'll be able to vanquish our enemies, then that's no less than a Nevuah Mefureshes of a Navi. And under those circumstances, we're clearly obligated to go to battle without any fear whatsoever. However, that's not necessarily a haftocha that's operative under all circumstances. It depends. It's contingent upon our behavior. It depends on what our commitment to Hashem Yisbarach is. So if one asks, why was Yonah's son afraid and all call yourself because of Goliath, because of this Goliath HaPlishti? And the answer, Chazal say, that for 40 days, Hashkim Baharev, he was blaspheming, cursing, and Chazal, the Gemara, and Sota indicates, what was the Hashkein Baharev, says the Gemara, Levatlam Mikriyashma Shachris V'Arbis. He tried to undo that schuskiyim that we would have had in engaging in war with him. Hashkein Baharev refers to Kriyashma Shachris V'Arbis. And in that situation, a foundation that we can rely on was negated, was repudiated. And therefore, even Yonasan, who was certainly a valorous kind of soldier, he's choshesh against the blasphemy of Goliath HaPlishti. Only David HaMelech, that he succeeded, as Chazal described, and Rashi quotes it over there, HaKoas HaAriva Adov, he saw that as an oath from Hashem, that he will have Atzlocha, so he entered the foray, he entered the picture, only he does not have fear from the Plishti. So let's just perhaps sum up this session, and I see we're going to have to continue, Mirtz Hashem. So even when there's no foundation for Bitachon and Hashem, if there is no Haftacha, if there are no, what is called in simple Hebrew, Kisuyim, we have no coverage. Coverage means insurance coverage. Insurance coverage means Torah coverage, mitzvahs coverage, Kriyashma coverage, and the like. If we don't have that kind of background, then one better be careful. Then one better be cautious. Then one better be practical. On the other hand, when we have a clear haftacha, then under those circumstances, we can be, as the Mishnah writes at the end of the Seita, then ein lanu lishoein ela avinu shebashamayim. Then we can rely on Hashem Yisbarach. And this yesod, I believe, is exactly what is being told to us in the two tshuvas that I began with this evening, the tshuva of the Igros Meisha, the tshuva of the Chabad Das, that a person has to somehow try to evaluate himself. We have to engage in a self kind of evaluation. Where am I in terms of my Shmiras HaMitzvahs, my commitment to Hashem Yisbarach? So on the one hand, there's an obligation to have bitachon in Hashem Yisbarach. And if there is a haftacha, if there's a nevuah, if there's a clear hora, there's no question that one has the wherewithal to do so. On the other hand, where there is no haftacha and there's no nevuah, then of course one has to move in the other direction. And our problem, just to put it in a nutshell, is that we are somehow in the middle. We are caught betwixt and between. We are between these two poles, between these two forces. On the one hand, that we ask ourselves, how much ishtadlus must we do? Where does Abitachon begin? And the entire Tanakh, Lufi Ani Uzdaiti, is concerned with this issue. Literally from Bereshis to the end of Divrei Hayomim. That is the primary concern of the entire Tanakh. Sometimes the Navi gives us the chacha that we have too much bitachon. Sometimes he gives us the chacha we have too much ishtadlus. And we'll just end with a well-known story of the Briskov, Rabbi Elba Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. This is among the well-known stories of the Brisker Rav, and I heard it from Talmidim of the Brisker Rav. I was lucky to learn with a fair number of Talmidim of the Brisker Rav in the course of many years in Yeshiva Saber Yitzhak Ochanan, and also I met a fair number of them in Eretz Yisrael. And so one of the stories that's told about him, in the Second World War, he was in Warsaw, after Warsaw fell to the Germans, and there was not a lot of food, and certainly Jews didn't have really access to much food. However, there were many Jews who were very venerating of the Bris Karov. And there was one specific Jew who loved the Bris Karov, and he decided he's going to be Meisel Nefesh and bring him food on a daily basis. When Ches Tishrei appeared on the scene, so the Bris Karov began to think, tomorrow is Tes Tishrei. Tomorrow is Erev Yom Kippur. And Erev Yom Kippur, we know, the Shulchan Aruch writes, there's a mitzvah lechol be'erev Yom Kippurim. As a matter of fact, one of the few Rabbi Kivegas that's known by Talmidim in my yeshiva, Rabbi Kivega quotes the source that the mitzvah begins the night before. Zvizim Makdim and the mitzvahs. So that Rabbi Kivega they're familiar with. So Erev Yom Kippur, there's a mitzvah to eat. And so the Bris Karov began to think, what am I going to do? Erev Yom Kippur, I have to eat more than I'm accustomed to eat on a daily basis. And we are, during times of war, Yemei Melchama, Mi Odea, Ma Yulad Yom, what's going to be? So the Bris Karov decided to save from the food that this wonderful Jew brought to him on Ches Tishrei, to leave it for Erev Yom Kippur. This way, Erev Yom Kippur, he'll be able to be in the mitzvah of Achila of Erev Yom Kippur. The next day, the Jew brought the Bris Karov the regular portion, and he told him the following. L'chvod Yom Kippur, he also wanted to bring fish. There is a minhag quoted by the Torah to eat fish at Erev Yom Kippur. Tosfos Ksuvos discusses it, quoted by many poskim, many have such a practice. However, what happened, said this Jew to the Bris Karov, at that moment, the fish that he was carrying was somehow in a box, and the box was literally positioned in a place where there was a tzatza that fell. There was some projectile that came and destroyed the entire box of fish. So the Bris Karov's response was, I know why this happened, because I was not somich on Hashem Yisbarach, because I left food from yesterday for tomorrow. And because of my lack of bitochum, that's the reason why this event occurred. This kind of hanhoga of the Bris Karov may very well be fitting the Chafetz Chaim, Rav Shimon Yochai, people of that ilk, people of that stature. Their hishtadlus could be minimalistic, but my hishtadlus, I'm not speaking about the august audience in front of me, perhaps you're of that level, but I know exactly where I am, hopefully in the middle, as I mentioned the Chassam Sefer earlier. And therefore, an average person cannot behave in such a fashion. An average person has to prepare food for these eventualities. We have no avtocha, what's going to be tomorrow. A person's on a very high madrega, then his bitochon could also be on a very high madrega. So to a large extent, there's no doubt that the madrega of a person is critical in terms of the level of ishtadlus that a person is going to be obligated to show or to utilize. And this is by way of, I believe, understanding the Mishnah Berurah that we began with this evening. Mishnah Berurah is talking about the average person and the average individual should be kovei to Torah, as the Mechaber said, as the Rambam writes in Hilchos Talmud Torah, when he defines the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And now that a person has a business to operate and perhaps customers will have to wait, and he'll be able to devote 15 minutes a day, or perhaps longer, hopefully, to the study of Torah. The average person certainly has that obligation to do so. No question, he has to engage in ishtadlus. However, at the same time, there has to be a minimalistic level of bitachon Hashem Yisbarach and a recognition of the overwhelming significance of the study of Torah, which can obviously change and transform a person completely to a different type of individual, different values, different hashkafa. But just bottom line, it's clear that there's a constant tug of war between these two forces, namely the obligation to have bitachon, on the other hand, the obligation of ishtadlus. So the key is, and this to me is the bottom line, and it's embedded in the Rashi and Bayeshev that I mentioned earlier, I believe embedded in these two Gdolei Yisrael that I mentioned their tshuvas, namely, one has to engage in ishtadlus, but recognizing that even with my ishtadlus, at the end of the day, Yad Hashem is koveya. Everything comes from the Ribbono Shalom. It's not kochi v'otzim yodi osali esachay lazeh, but kiyu anosin l'chol koach lasos choyl. Bring that there in the next year, which will be part 7. Hopefully, we'll complete this series with a bit more on bitachon, and at the same time, perhaps address another very fascinating ha'ara that I saw in the Mishnah Berurah here as well in Siman Kuf Nun Heh.